It's Monday.
It's April 20th.
And the word of the day is marijuana.
Damn straight.
Sentence. If you get accidentally drugged with marijuana during Noah's birthday dinner, just find where normal hands go and don't make eye contact with Eli Bosnick because he also got drugged and he looks crazy. It'll make you crazy.
Yeah, he was also driving at the time, so making eye contact with him would have been bad for everybody.
Yeah, and my eyes were closed, so you couldn't
make eye contact. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. Broadcasting delayed from America's Far Center, we are the Skeptocrats.
On this week's episode, it's been a year's worth of week.
We'll all continue to be more qualified to run the FBI than Cash Patel.
And thanks to Donald Trump, the Strait of Hormuz exists in a quantum state of close open.
But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow Skeptocrats, No Illusions, and Eli Bosnick. Gentlemen, happy Pot Roast Day.
Damn right. I roast pot every day, but I'll do it more festively today, I promise.
Yeah. Nice.
And Satan is always fall off the bone texture, so I'm ready to go.
Sure. We would actually do a brisket on 420 back in the day.
As would we.
Like a pot roast party. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
All right, here we go in our lead story tonight. If you made a parlay bet on Kalshi that by the end of last week, the Mets would extend their losing streak to 9 games, and the price of crude oil, Brent crude oil, would dip below $92 a barrel, and Donald Trump would post an image of himself as Jesus Christ of Nazareth, healing, I think, John Stewart with a glowy light ball from his hand, and Stewart would be getting a hand job at the same time, and there's a flying demon in the background who stole Lady Liberty's hat with the spikes, and Vice President Janstance would son of mansplain Catholicism to the Pope, and Villanova would announce they'll be opening their basketball season against Notre Dame with a game in Rome just for Pope Bobby in November. He's class of 77 at Villanova, by the way. And Pete Hegseth would lead a Christian prayer at the Pentagon based on Pulp Fiction. If you made that parlay bet, you did quite well.
Yeah, well done.
Also, you should cash out and stop making parlay bets. Because all of that did happen. Also, all those sites are big losers for almost everyone. Maybe stop.
Yeah, right. And by the way, if you were like inside the administration and somehow you actually already knew that all that shit was going to happen and you still bet on it, that would not have been the worst case of insider trading in the administration that month.
Yeah. I feel like I would be deeply unwilling to be on the team Pope Bob was rooting against at a game I played at the Vatican, right? Like, I know I'm not Catholic, but it feels like a real Washington General situation.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Unfair.
And just a reminder that Pete Hegseth had his broker try to make a bet on a war thing, and it would have lost. It didn't go through, but it would have lost because he's an imbecile and corrupt. Okay, so the big news that was adjacent to your amazing parlay is the opening of the Strait of Hormuz, at least temporarily, after a temporary ceasefire of U.S. attacks on Iran, which seems like it won't last very long, and then a temporary ceasefire of Israel attacking Lebanon. Ibid. Iran agreed to finally allow oil tankers to pass through. And it closed again. It closed again just now. That was fast. Anyway, Iran's been letting through only a few of their allies and charging a fee at their Ayatollah booth that's paid in crypto. More on that later. So apparently the strategy of Trump and Hegseth was to ignore how this obvious geographical choke point would be a giant problem, and then realize it was in fact a giant problem after starting a war, and then eventually trying to fix the blockade by doing a double blockade, a blockade of the blockade, by blockading Iran's ports to put pressure on. Well, the strait finally opened for a second, and that led to oil prices dropping all the way down to about 150% of where they were before we attacked.
Right, yeah.
So causing that giant problem for the world economy, costing thousands of lives and hundreds of billions of dollars, and then repairing part of the problem was a big win for the Trump administration. And then it closed again, so that was nothing.
Well, and oil prices are going to go back up, yeah, as soon as
it opens. Sure will.
I love how you can't get all the way through the explanation of how pathetic their so-called victory is before it collapses, right?
Yeah.
Right away.
Well, and based on what we know about the behavior of the American voter, that victory will secure Republicans sweeping wins in the midterms as millions of Americans dress like half-repaired Humpty Dumpty at the voting booth.
Could never have seen any of this coming. So where does that leave us? Well, we're almost there. All we need to do now is, well, get the strait open again.
Sure.
Recover a bunch of radioactive material that we exploded with bombs. I believe the scientific term is dust. Should be easy to get the dust. Well, except maybe that little bit that always makes like a line on the floor.
Sure.
Next to the dustpan. That's the tough.
Yeah, it's like a minor amount. And then we just bang out a deal with the new, even more radical supreme leader of Iran with the exact same name that gets them to promise they won't try to rebuild a nuclear weapons program. We'll probably offer sanctions relief in exchange for cooperation with international inspectors.
Huh.
Also known as the JCPOA, which we already fucking had until Trump ripped it up in 2018. And then Trump started a war claiming we need to block the nuclear program that got heavily ramped up ever since he pulled out of that agreement. But now it's all good. Mission accomplished. That's 10 wars ended by Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been saying 8 for a while. I don't know how he got to 8, but this was number 9 and number 10 for him. During an interview last week, he actually claimed it's 10 now and added, quote, "Nobody's ever ended one war."
Really?
Who's ended one? Nobody.
I feel like exactly. Some.
Careful, Heath. He may be using that as an excuse to nuke Japan again.
Well, right. Yeah, no, it's never ended. Well, but here we are again where we can't even get all the way through explaining that ending a war that you started doesn't count before that non-victory collapses. Motherfucker failed to just stop doing it.
Yeah, so now he's back down to, I guess, only 9 wars ended. We'll see how that goes. And now you're probably thinking, what the fuck did you just say earlier about Pete Hegseth doing a Pulp Fiction prayer?
Sure.
That's a fair question. If you haven't been following the news for a few days, you might have missed it. During a ceremony at the Pentagon, Pete decided to recite a prayer that he referred to as CSAR 2517, short for Combat Search and Rescue 2517. He said it was used right before the mission that rescued an American pilot who got shot down earlier this month. It was a very clever variation of Ezekiel 25:17, but actually of 1 Samuel L. Jackson 25:17. Mm-hmm. Not clear if Hegseth was fully aware of that. He didn't mention Pulp Fiction. He said, quote, "Pray with me, please. The path of the downed aviator is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who, in the name of camaraderie and duty, shepherds the lost through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to capture and destroy my brother. And you will know my call sign is Sandy One when I lay my vengeance upon thee. Amen." End quote from Pete Hegseth.
So he was just, he was floating a little biblical fan fiction?
Pretty much.
It appears,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, and look, he cites this biblical reference with a bit of a wink. So I'm willing to grant that he knows that the origin of that passage is the film Pulp Fiction and not
possibly
the Holy
yeah,
Word of
yeah.
God. But that still means that he led soldiers in a blasphemous, non-biblical prayer that was written just like to sound badass before you murder somebody.
Right.
Right? That's so much worse than not realizing Tarantino got more of that passage from a Sonny Chiba monologue than the fucking
yeah.
Bible.
Yeah, exactly. God, it was so rough. It was like the crusade version of the time that I wrote a song about the number pi using the music from American Pie. It was awesome. But then my high school principal surprised me at a big assembly with printed pages of my lyrics that he got from my AP calculus teacher who wanted to prank me. And the principal insisted that I lead everyone in a sing-along. It was terrifying. And deeply tragic.
Noah, Heath is working his tragic backstory into the headlines again.
Oh, said, oh, Eli, it's always there, man. It's sometimes it's hovering just below the surface, but well, it's that, always.
We said
there.
It had to stay below the surface.
But it was so. Bye bye to the constant pie. Starts with 3.14159265355. Whatever. Pete's performance.
Those
was...
aren't very good lyrics. Like if you really wanted to like sell us with your lyrics, that was not the way to go, man. That wasn't the high point.
Put your heart tussie into it.
Five kind of rhymes with pie. Whatever. Pete's performance. It was, I admit, less cringeworthy than mine, but only by a little. Only by a little. And again, mine didn't have a holy war theme.
Yeah, I disagree. I think you're Virginia.
Well, yeah, it's neither here nor there. It's neither here nor there. We're moving on. Also, Hegseth got mad at the media last week for, well, you know, naming things he did.
He does
and
that.
He compared the media to the Pharisees.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the Jewish elders from the Bible times who, at least according to Christian lunatics, killed Jesus Christ. Some people might say that's anti-Semitic from Pete, but anyway, the context for Hegseth was a bit different. I'll admit it was a bit different. He mentioned that Pharisees watched Jesus heal the sick with magic, but the Pharisees refused to acknowledge the godliness of that. So the media is just like that, according to Pete. And I guess Donald Trump doing the Iran war is Jesus Christ healing the sick. That's the analogy he was going for.
Yeah, well, you know, unkilling, stopping killing, bringing back from the dead. These are all cinnamon.
Yeah, no, cinnamons. No, it's like that Red Cross doctor from that picture I saw.
The famous the Red Cross doctor,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a doctor.
Did you guys see that the Pit tweeted out a picture of their entire cast dressed in the robes from the doctor?
Oh, Phenomenal. My God. That's amazing.
That show is great, and I love their writers, their producers for that. That's beautiful work. Okay. Here's the thing. You don't have to worry. We've got some good news in here, too. Not really, though. It's something. House Democrats actually did something. They launched articles of impeachment against Hegseth for carrying out a war that was never authorized, and, of course, for doing war crimes along the way. They also reminded everyone in their impeachment thing that he's an imbecile who shared classified military details during a group chat that accidentally included the reporter Jeffrey Goldberg from The Atlantic. That impeachment, sadly, is going nowhere right now, but it could go somewhere if everyone votes correctly in November. Fucking D up. Okay, well, seriously do it. And for now, we'll just, while you get ready, it's in November, get ready now. While you're getting ready, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Aura Frames.
Flowers.
Dude, awful.
What? I said flowers.
Hey, guys. What are you doing?
Apparently, I'm not giving this year's Mother's Day gift with enough feeling for Heath.
The first time we practiced, you threw a vase at me and said, "Here, are you happy?"
Because I want her to be happy.
Guys, if you want a way to mix things up from the standard Mother's Day playbook, you should try an Aura Frame.
Oh, what's an Aura Frame?
Aura Frames are digital picture frames that come with unlimited pictures and storage. You can load it up with pictures and video for mom, and all she has to do is enjoy.
I don't know, Noah. My mom isn't exactly techie.
No problem. You can set up your Aura Frame while it's still in the box, so all mom has to do is plug it in.
Sounds great. How do I get one?
Named number one by Wirecutter, you can save on the gifts moms love by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $25 off their best-selling Carver mat frame with the code SKEPTOCRAT. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code SKEPTOCRAT. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks.
Like you mean it.
Thanks, Noah.
That's better.
We're back. Next up in headlines in Methinks the Lady Doth Protest Goomwouch News.
I know what we're going to talk about. I'm excited.
Podcast listener, I have spent the last decade and a half as a professional comedian. The overwhelming focus of my time and energy has been how to make things funny. And yet, time and time again since 2016, the shenanigans of the Trump administration have managed to be more deeply brilliantly hilarious than anything I could ever dream of conjuring out of fiction. And we got our latest example of that again this week when, apropos of absolutely fucking nothing, Melania Trump announced that all the rumors you've been hearing about her relationship with Jeffrey Epstein are completely false.
Greatest nobody nothing of all time.
Right? Incredible.
This will never be topped. Like, I didn't think this would ever exist, but now the Streisand effect has the pedophile corollary to the Streisand.
Right, effect. Yeah.
This is like Barbara getting mad about those aerial photos of her house and painting "not Streisand house" on her roof in giant letters. And also writing "adult consensual" just
for the record,
really big letters on the roof as well.
Well, there was also this clearly intentional singularity that screamed of self-preservation about the whole thing, right? Like, okay, so of everyone directly involved in my marriage, I'm the one who least knew Jeffrey Epstein, right? So if there's ever a reason to think that this is a real kid rapey kind of marriage, I want everybody to know it might have just been a half kid rapey marriage.
Fuck.
Exactly. And while she did refute some of the lies about her in her speech, she also made up a bunch of lies that we wouldn't have looked into if she hadn't lied about
really?
Them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For example, she says, and I'm not going to do the voice because I need you to people to hear the words. "My email reply to Maxwell cannot be categorized as anything more than casual correspondence. My polite reply to her email doesn't amount to anything more than a trivial note," end quote. But here's that email. "Dear G, how are you? Nice story about J.E. in New York Mag. You look great in the picture."
Hey, is that the New York Magazine story where your husband said Jeffrey Epstein is a terrific guy who enjoys young women? Is that what you're talking about?
Quiam. Continuing the quote here. "I know you are very busy flying all over the world. How was Palm Beach? I cannot wait to go down. Give me a call when you are back in New York. Have a great time. Love, Melania."
Okay, rough. All right. So, Eli, I understand why you didn't do the voice and everything, because you do have to actually... That's fine. But I think it is actually like maybe a violation of your journalistic integrity to have misquoted here. She did not say that this was a trivial note. She very clearly said it was a trivial note, which, for all we know, it might have been.
Truly,
we don't know the fuck that means.
I spent so much time watching this video and writing jokes about this video, but it would just turn us into a clip. We would have had an hour-long episode where I would have just been like, here's the next four
words.
Me
with
See
a
if
good
you can
time.
Play along.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but then, on top of that, this trivial note, this is Maxwell's reply. Quote, "Sweet Pea, thanks for your message. Actually, plans changed again. Woof, got her. And I'm now on my way back to New York. I leave again on Friday, so I do not think I have time to see you, sadly. I will try and call, though. Keep well."
Oof.
End of reply.
Oof. I know it's not the point of the story, but what a fuck you. I will try to call. Oh, my God. It would take less time to call than to bang out the fucking message.
I thought Heath's vows were lovely.
Oh, my arm can't reach the last couple of them and get around to this. I'll just text.
Oh, I really fucked up my shoulder not calling you. Okay, but the lies get weirder. Melania said in her little speech, quote, "My name has never appeared in court documents, depositions, victim statements, or FBI interviews surrounding the Epstein matter." But Melania Trump is named by a cooperating witness in an FBI FT-302 proffer interview, which is where the claim that Epstein introduced her to Donald Trump comes from. Now, look, I know that doesn't necessarily mean that's what happened, but I definitely think it is now because she bothered to deny
it. Yeah, well, right.
It's like saying, "I'm not shitting." Like, you can't say that and have it mean anything but the opposite
right,
to everybody
yes.
who hears you say, "I'm not shitting." Well, now I know you're shitting. Melania, like, I wanted her to just, like, call a do-over on the press conference. We might get this. She just comes back, like, the next day or, I don't know, tomorrow. "Okay, everybody, this is my Greek friend, Ambassador Kimberly Guilfoyle. Kim, nobody is saying we were introduced to Donald and Don Jr. on that island. If I asked, also Greek George Papadopoulos about it. He would back me up. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. Great.
Anyways.
Why is nobody here?
Where'd they all go? It's just Saraj.
Not buying it.
Anyways, it seems like the double bluff is not going great for her. Not
well,
a lot of people
even when
it.
You set aside her pronunciations, yeah.
Yeah. So if you'd like to read a full refutation of her statement, you can find it on EpsteinExposed.com, which I have linked in the show notes.
Also, happy to announce that we've been doing a little spying of our own. The hidden microphone we have in the FBI main office, well, it mostly got Kash Patel yelling the word wardrobe and then
sure.
Nobody showing up because that's not a thing he has. But we also got some insight about Melania. Let's roll that tape.
You could see if there's a home address.
Okay, yeah, no, I'll check there too.
Hey, hey.
Hey, boss, what's up?
How's it going?
Yeah, quick question. Were we looking into a connection between Melania Trump and Jeffrey Epstein?
Not that really, I'm aware of, no.
Okay. Did y'all see her speech?
Oh, yeah.
So, are we looking into it now?
100%.
Yes, we are, yes.
Okay, good. Thought so. Just, you know, got to check.
Sure.
Hey, you guys see there's a dig where Qdoba used to be?
Oh, nice.
I like their warm bowls.
They are good. Yes, I enjoy those too.
Yes.
And in LIV and Let Die news. So, we've talked a bit about sports washing on this show before, but if you're not familiar with the term, that's what you call it when a fascist regime tries to distract from their human rights abuses by sponsoring major sporting events. Like, you know, when they let Qatar host the 2022 World Cup, or when they let the U.S. host the 2026 Olympics. And one of the most ambitious practitioners of sports washing is the Saudi royal family, who have been invested heavily in Formula One racing, tennis events, and perhaps most infamously, their very own PGA without beer and hookers.
That's right.
Well, sorry, without beer anyway. But it looks like that golf league might just fall the fuck apart because Americans hate Saudi Arabia so much that they won't even fall asleep to its golf.
What's going on? People with compromised morals are golf's target audience, people.
Right?
How did you not nail this?
Okay, that Riyadh Comedy Festival, it went so well. It made careers.
It did, yeah. So,
just that magician guy, the magician comedian from England?
Yeah. So good, yeah.
So
I know his name. I just don't want to say.
Right off the top of my head, I got it right here.
He's a star, though, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So just in case you need a solid reason to hate this league, other than the fact that it's primarily funded by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, and you really shouldn't need another reason beyond that, but if you do.
That should do it for you.
Yeah. I should add, though, that among the most visible partners backing this breakaway golf league was Schmuck Lorange himself. See, the PGA won't play on Trump-owned courses. Actually, no professional golf organization will play on Trump-owned courses. Possibly because he's driven on all the fucking greens, but possibly because fuck that guy. That's more likely it. So instead, he got in bed with these fucking murderous autocrats that are running Saudi Arabia, and he hosted a bunch of their tournaments and actively tried to broker a merger between them and the PGA.
Now, admittedly, the score for the ladies will go down a bit because of the burqa. Hard to get a full backswing with that thing on. But overall, same game. No one's going to notice.
Okay. Eli's joking. They don't let women play golf.
No, right. Well, how would they drive the golf carts? It's just not. It's, yeah. But like everything that Trump touches, the LIV quickly went to shit. It's been losing a staggering amount of money since its inception. They lost $250 million in 2022, their most profitable year ever. Another $400 million in 2023, about $500 million in 2024. We don't know how much they lost exactly last year, but we know that their cumulative losses are now well over $1.4 billion. But apparently, their accountants just realized that you don't actually want the lowest possible profits just because it's a golf league. So now, rumors are swirling that the Saudi backers are about to slash or even eliminate their investment going forward.
And honestly, learning that Saudis can stop giving you money, it's going to fuck up a ton of Trump's plans.
Right?
So he's
shaking
by this.
If you're looking to throw some money at stuff and lose, I got an idea for a podcast league. Pretty fucking sweet.
Now, at the moment, LIV is vehemently denying the multiple reports and insists that there's some other reason that all their senior leadership was called to an emergency meeting in New York and not a single fucking one of them was present at the tournament that they were hosting in Mexico City that day.
Guys, I just found out about this place called Pomfrites.
Yeah, right. So no, that must have been it.
You gotta get here. Irish curry. No, come on down. Sense.
But
Mamoon's falafel right across.
Right? Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. But at said tournament, the hosts had a representative from the organization on to push back against the rumors and swear on his mother's grave that there was nothing wrong at LIV and they were actually doing just great and they were planning on losing all this money. And then fucking 10 minutes later, the entire goddamn feed for the tournament went out worldwide. And when they come back, they're like, that was a local power outage. That doesn't count. Okay. That was nothing to do with unpaid power bills. Doesn't count.
Yeah. Less trustworthy than the Mexican power grid is not how you want to hear your business described.
Not great. Right. Right.
Not great. Okay. My favorite part is the idiot golfers who left the PGA tour.
Yes.
Trying to figure out their lives now because this thing's probably going to collapse. Some of the top players got offered a chance to come back by the PGA, but they had to give $5 million to charity and agree to some other sanctions on them. Some of them accepted that. But one guy, Bryson DeChambeau, he sucks. He's exactly as cool as it sounds from his name, Bryson DeChambeau.
Right, yes. Yeah.
He refused the offer in a huff.
Just now.
He refused it and he said, I'm just going to be a YouTuber then. I don't need to play golf.
Right.
And I'm sure he doesn't need to do anything. He's probably won a bunch of money by now, but like, it's just a sad
like
thing.
When you, like, you're fine. Like our colleague.
I'll
that's
do
not,
YouTube
yeah.
then. Fuck you.
Yeah. Hey, look at us. Us and Bryson Shampoo striving for YouTube at the same time. And can I say, with the same amount of success, Bryson. Get a nice background like Heath's. People really like this.
Yeah, no, they do. Yeah, they do, yeah.
He's over
to
here.
Be fair,
I don't know where he is.
I should concede that the whole business plan included losing a lot of money early on, right? The idea was that they were going to lure away all the best golfers by offering bigger prizes. The Saudi royal family is willing to lose a little money to sand down some of their human rights ignoring reporter dismembering edges. But the thing about golf fans is that there's not actually that many of them. Right. It's still worth putting on TV because they're disproportionately wealthy and advertisers are willing to pay a premium to get at those. But the PGA already produces all the golf the world really needs. And hey, maybe then some. And since there's no good way to transition from a story about golf to an ad about dressing well, I'm just going to say we're going to pause for a word from our other sponsor this week, Quince.
Well, hello, podcast listener. It is I, Melania Trump.
Sarah Bear here, coming at you as well.
We want to respond to the horrific and insulting rumors that Quince's new Flowknit activewear fabric is actually human skin. Is not.
No, it is not. Quince's Flowknit activewear is moisture-wicking, anti-odor, and soft enough that you'll actually want to wear it every day. But that softness is fabric, not skin. And even if it were skin, which it is not, it would definitely not be human skin.
The best part is that their prices are 50 to 60% less than similar brands. How? Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, but not from their skin. So you're paying for quality, not brand markup and not human skin.
Okay, you guys are ruining it. Hi, Tyler. Quince sent us some stuff to try, and it's stylish and comfortable and not human skin. It's not, no. I don't even know why they're saying it like this, but it isn't. It's just, it's lovely clothes from a lovely and hopefully very forgiving company. That's why I, Tall Tyler, personally endorse Quince.
I think it's pronounced Quince.
Nope. It is Quince. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/skepticrat for free shipping and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. Go to quince.com/skepticrat for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skepticrat.
Not human skin. It's
not. Stop saying that.
What? I'm saying it's not that.
I'm pretty sure it's Quince.
And we're back. Next up in headlines, in the very hoddle of a modern major general news.
Well done.
Cryptocurrency continues to be a giant pyramid scheme.
Yup.
Even if you have an amazing set of Cutco knives, you still can't turn your shitcoin into a corkscrew if they lose their value all of a sudden.
That's true.
Much like every pyramid scheme, the people who got in early might have made some big profits, but for everyone else, who's not a billionaire whale who can move the market, it's just a digital casino with no rules. And it's mostly for doing crimes. That's sure. The primary use case of crypto. And one of the biggest examples is the President of the United States.
Yeah.
With everything going on in the world, it's been way too easy for everybody to stop talking about the Trump family company, World Liberty Financial, making literally billions of dollars by offering a big, invisible bribing kiosk in the form of crypto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We like visible bribing kiosks. Thank you very much. Patreon.com/.
Look, honestly, if it wasn't for buying drugs and paying sex workers, there would be no ethical uses of crypto left, I think.
Or our Patreon. Yeah. It works for everything.
But there's at least one person other than us who's going to keep yelling about this. That would be author, documentarian, and Oscar-nominated actor Ben McKenzie.
Huh.
Also, he was in the OC. He's the co-author, along with journalist Jacob Silverman, of the 2023 book Easy Money, Cryptocurrency, Casino Capitalism, and the Golden Age of Fraud. And that book was the basis for McKenzie's documentary that just came out over the weekend called Everyone is Lying to You for Money. And during an interview with Jon Stewart last week. Yeah. It's going to be good, I bet. I'm looking forward to it. During an interview with Jon Stewart last week, McKenzie laid out his case for, you know, not having completely unregulated dark money made of FOMO and vibes and nothing else.
Even as a guy who points out how Christians are wrong for a living, that job sounds too easy. Sounds like he's getting on easy.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and he's up against some ardent supporters about at the level of faithful religious people that we have to deal
yeah,
with.
Right, so, right.
So we'll get into a few of the arguments from McKenzie, but first I want to pull out that pin from earlier. Cryptocurrency, which Trump, by the way, did a complete 180 on.
Didn't he?
And became a huge fan of the moment he realized he could get donations and become part of the scam himself. Crypto is being used by Iran to take tolls in the Strait of Hormuz and to sell oil. And because it's crypto, that means Iran doesn't have to worry about a freeze on their holdings in banks around the world or sanctions that block Iranian banks as a trading partner. And look, okay, I do enjoy watching Trump get foiled by the scam that he's also part of. But the regime of Iran, those are bad guys too, just like Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin and terrorist groups and drug cartels and child pornographers and literally Jeffrey Epstein, all of whom use crypto to avoid sanctions and law enforcement.
Yep.
Yeah, people, cash already existed. Imagine how crimey your intentions for money have to be that cash is too traceable.
Yeah, it turns out that people who thought that the problem with money was all the regulations on banking, we're fucking idiots. Why would you have thought that?
Turns out, yep. So if you follow this topic, you've probably heard a bunch of the basic arguments, but McKenzie mentioned some details that I wasn't aware of. It was a pretty interesting interview. One was an example of just how rigged the crypto system is, despite claims that it's a great substitute for the rigged banking system, traditional banking system. And it's because the digital marketplaces have no accountability. Even the evil banks and the evil stock exchanges have a little bit of that. So there was a moment in late 2021 when Bitcoin prices had recently hit a big new high and then quickly started crashing. Eli, by the way, had just pitched the idea of buying a bunch of Bitcoin about a week earlier. Mm-hmm.
Maintaining my perfect record of financial decisions.
Yeah. Crazily enough, like you actually, if you had held since, you would have made money. It bothers me. Anyway. McKenzie documented.
Don't worry.
Perfect record.
Yeah. Continues the record. So McKenzie documented what happened for two Bitcoin investors who were both using the biggest marketplace called Binance. One had a long position, betting on the price of Bitcoin going up, and another had a short position, betting on the price going down. As the price started tanking, The long position guy wanted to cut his losses and get out, while the short position guy wanted to realize some profits. So they both submitted transactions on Binance, but Binance didn't like the big volatility at that moment, and they shut down the entire platform. While it was shut down, the price got really low on exchanges that were still going. But by the time Binance came back online, the price had moved back up. So the long position guy who tried to cut his losses got his coins liquidated at an extra low price for an even bigger loss. And the guy who tried to take out his profit missed the chance and also lost. Huh. They had opposite positions and both lost. Now, okay, in fairness, like stock exchanges have done emergency shutdowns once in a while too, but it's at least theoretically possible to investigate afterward and figure out what should have happened. This was more like a casino disappearing entirely during a roulette spin. Ball is on the thing, and then they disappear, and then when they reappear, it turns out red, black, and green all lost because fuck you, all the money's in a country that you can't even spell. And this is just one story out of so many similar examples.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, but they did leave behind this open public ledger that says, I can fuck myself. Sorry, why did I think a ledger was going to help?
Yes!
It's just...
Right. I feel like at this point we should remind everybody that crimes matter even when you couldn't possibly give a fuck about their victims, right? It's still bad that they're happening.
It is still bad. Yeah. Not rooting for crypto investors, but yeah.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. Definitely. Is that there's like so much of you is just going, okay, yeah, but counterpoint, fuck those guys, right? But and I'm like, yeah,
which,
but still.
You know, I sympathize with that position.
Yeah.
But it's still bad when there's, you know, a bunch of fraud. Also worth noting, unregulated digital money can just disappear. And unlike a bank account getting hacked or the entire bank going under, there's nothing like the FDIC to back up crypto. Mm-hmm. And circling back to Kim Jong-un, he's apparently paying for a giant team of hackers that just sits in a warehouse smoking cigarettes all day and stealing from accounts on crypto exchanges. Mm. Of course, you know, you can sue Kim Jong-un if that happens to you. But no, you can't. No, you can't at all. And it's estimated that North Korea financed about half their nuclear program using stolen cryptocurrency.
Yeah, when they stole from the English, they used to call it quid games.
Okay, that's pretty good.
No, yeah, and I honestly kind of want to see quid games now, right? Like basically it's the same show, but all the colors are drab. And the games are called something like Bits and Cheeses or something. Yeah, I love it.
All right, that brings us to stable coins, something Mackenzie told us about that. Stable coins, that's the type of crypto with its price pegged to a national currency usually. It's not used for speculation, just for the invisible transaction that avoids banks part of crypto. Like if a cartel wants to sell a giant boatload of heroin or cocaine, they'll take payment in a stable coin, and they know the payment isn't going to lose half its value like the next day, potentially. The biggest stable coin is called Tether, and their USDT coins are always worth $1. And multiple investigations have shown just huge amounts of crime transactions conducted in Tether. For example, Tether invested $775 million in Rumble, the neo-Nazi YouTube. Now, I know that's not the type of crime that investigation was talking about, but I think that should also count as a crime with Tether. And here's the not fun fact that I learned from Mackenzie. The chief broker and reserve holder of Tether is a firm called Cantor Fitzgerald. And their CEO, at least until last year, was Howard Lutnick, now the Secretary of Commerce. Is that the guy who said he never went to Epstein Island? And then we all saw a photo of him with his entire family, including his kids, on that island eating a meal? Yes, it is. That is the person. And two nannies. Two nannies went with him to Epstein Island as well.
Can't have one wandering off on that island. You really
you want to make sure you get your nannies. Yeah,
you want a one-to-one, you know, ratio there with the nanny. I guess I get that. Cool. So now Lutnick's sons are in charge of Cantor Fitzgerald while Howard's busy doing corruption and literally helping all our adversaries by doing this tether thing, among his many other duties. One other detail, and I'm sure this is unrelated. Tether was a major donor to the East Wing demolition at the White House and the ballroom construction.
Yeah.
Just straight to jail. All these people straight to jail.
Well, to be fair, all we have to do is push the big red button on the wall of the new ballroom and they're already locked in there.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, right. Look, the fact that we didn't start locking up crypto bros just for being crypto bros means that really this is on us. We should have done that. We should have known this was going to metastasize.
Exactly.
This we're stage four crypto.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Yeah. And just a quick nod to the pro crypto camp. Not really, though. But one of the main arguments for crypto is based on distrust of traditional finance. And yeah, a lot of corruption in there. So I guess I get that. But crypto doesn't solve the problem. Sure. Okay. An evil autocratic government could abuse its financial power to oppress political enemies. I no idea what that would look like, but it sounds bad if that were to happen hypothetically. That being said, the corruption in crypto is even worse and even harder to untangle. One version actually of blockchain technology is called the tangle, and pretty much all the profits are being made by the shadowy oligarchs that are even more shadowy and oligarchish than the traditional finance industry ones. And now it's the same people doing both.
Right.
Lots of the time. Like Howard Lutnick. So maybe we get rid of the fucking crypto and, I don't know, the People's Front of Antifa can use cash for their zine and whatever they do. I'm rooting for them. So, yeah, the point is, the solution to evil autocrats isn't digital tulips. It's watering the tree of liberty.
Yeah. Yeah, she's looking parched, isn't she?
We're just talking about plants. These aren't metaphors. We're talking about plants. We're talking about plants.
Just gardening tips. The trees. We're allowed to give gardening tips.
Not any senator.
Choose wisely, though.
Right, exactly. Obviously.
Fuck.
And in Mom Donnie Good Job News, we don't get to report on a lot of good news these days on most of our shows, but especially here on The Skeptocrat, we're a bit caught up with the potential world wars to see the sunshine through the clouds. But in the tiny village of New York, New York, the Big Apple, Rock City, things are going pretty great. Because in spite of his promise to hunt Jews for sport, Mayor Zoran Mamdani's first 100 days in office have gone pretty freaking awesome.
Well, his part of those 100 days has been awesome, right? Like they've almost certainly been the most globally terrifying 100 days of my lifetime, like on Earth in general. But Mamdani's kicking ass with his little chunk of the Earth.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So the city actually created an entire website about all the things that the mayor has been up to in his first 100 days. And despite the emails from my aunt promising me that he would deputize Hamas as captains of the NYPD, it turns out that most of the stuff he's done is just good. Like creating the mayor's office to protect tenants, an office that, according to the city website, has won $34 million on behalf of tenants, and over 6,000 apartments across the city are now seeing repairs.
Okay, so I'm not sure if we're working with the most objective source we've ever used on this show here, but yeah, I mean, the project is objectively good regardless.
Exactly.
Eli is not the most objective source we've
used. That's what they say.
That's what I meant. That's, yeah, that's exactly.
That one time they put me on a chart, that was what that dot meant. It's not the most objective source. And on just day 8 of his administration, Mayor Mamdani joined Governor Hochul to announce a historic investment in affordable childcare for nearly 100,000 more kids. The $1.2 billion investment created 2K, that's free childcare for two-year-olds, expanded 3K, and extended childcare subsidies to tens of thousands of additional families. Fun fact, if you think that program is a waste of money, you are an irredeemably bad person. So it's a fun little litmus test as well, just sort of built right in there.
Yeah, right. Also on the subject, that video of him at the school with Barack where the kids are telling Obama that his first name is Mayor is fucking adorable.
Pretty cute. It's
pretty cute, man.
Yeah, doing good stuff in New York. But for me, his biggest accomplishment was creating the platonic ideal of a campaign that should be the model for Democrats.
Amen.
For sure. So I said this when he won the primary. I'll say it again. He spoke like a human being instead of a sociology professor in that campaign. His online presence was great. And it was the opposite of, you know, an 80-year-old trying to figure out Zoom, which we get a lot of these days. And most importantly, he was laser focused on economic justice.
Yes.
Also, he's just incredibly charming. Now, I get it. Everyone's not going to have that last thing, but a wide range of candidates. You don't have, like, he's in New York and he's a Democratic Socialist. It works in New York, but like a wide range of candidates that maybe aren't that in other places can do those first three things still. And based on some other elections since then and early polling for this year coming up, it's been working for a lot of those candidates doing the Zoran model.
Mm-hmm. And look, there's so much good here. I could not fit it all into one or even 10 headlines, right? He started a Know Your Rights campaign for immigrants and strengthened their protections. He gave away 1,500 theater tickets and fixed over 100,000 potholes. But I'd be remiss if I didn't take him to task for his biggest mistake.
Oh.
He still remains in support of the anti-democratic, racist, sexist, and cannibalistic prospect of congestion pricing.
It's a good thing, Eli.
It's been a huge failure.
It's good in every immeasurable way.
No, not if you measure it by very secret metrics that only I know about.
Okay.
You can't see my metrics, but they're very real.
Do you have a chart?
Mm-hmm. I do. It's out of frame. It's out of frame, but they're very real, and I want my $12 back.
Okay. And my chart has no connection to Epstein Island,
Epstein
just
Island.
So everybody
it's
knows.
Never, it's not skin. It's a normal, skinless chart.
And finally tonight, in 55-year-old man who still calls himself Kid News. Kid Rock's Rock the Country tour doesn't start until May 1st, but that doesn't mean it isn't already a disastrous clusterfuck of epic proportions. Hell, at the rate that artists are dropping out, would-be attendees are demanding refunds, and venues are slashing prices, the fact that it doesn't start until May 1st doesn't even guarantee that it'll start on May 1st.
Hey, maybe Kid Rock can do a gig in Riyadh. I hear they have some new money to invest.
Yeah, that's true. Cool, oh, there you go.
This tour People doesn't together, work out.
You know? Right?
So yeah, so the 8-city tour, shit, sorry, make that 7-city tour, after they realized they weren't quite up to headlining a big city like Anderson, South Carolina, population 31,000.
Rock city.
Rough.
A lot of competition that weekend, I'm sure. But anyway, so now they have a 7-city tour that is meant to celebrate America's 250th birthday, rather, in major venues like Belleville, Texas, Bloomingdale, Georgia, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And no, I'm not leaving out the big venues. Sioux Falls is the largest city they are playing by a factor of 4. And the festival features such artists as Kid Rock and a bunch of people so devoid of better options in the present music industry landscape that they agreed to be billed below Kid Rock.
Bill Cosby's.
Really, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Okay, so like I get they're trying to do like the small town thing. That can be good, but like the fact that you can't find fans of your thing in any place where lots of people would like to live is telling.
Right.
At the same time.
Exactly. So joining Kid Rock on stage will be such powerhouse acts as Jason Aldean, Blake Shelton, Brooks and Dunn, and septuagenarian Hank Williams Jr. Also Jelly Roll, selectively. He'll be at some of the shows. He had to pull out of the Sioux Falls show, but don't worry. He waited to do that until tickets had been on sale for a while.
Smart.
Ludacris and Shinedown, they also pulled out, but they did it a little bit more holistically, presumably when they found out they were going to be billed below Kid Rock. But don't worry. In their place, you can see McCoy Moore, Colton Bolin, Wynn Colt Ford, and dozens of other people who sound like somebody's making up cowboy names at gunpoint. I swear those are real fucking names.
Champ. Cramlin.
Hey, guys, did somebody print a new poster that says Main Stage 8 p.m. Making up cowboy names at gunpoint the band? Is that a real band?
Right.
Gumption.
Yeah, right.
Because that's actually a pretty sweet band. No, it is. Making up cowboy names at gunpoint.
All right. And now that you're titillated by the lineup and conveniently located by one of the unincorporated municipalities willing to host this monstrosity, you're probably wondering what it's going to cost you. Well, the answer is less and less by the minute, actually. They are slashing ticket prices. Yeah. They've gone insane. It's always a good sign when you're smashing prices like 2 weeks before.
Are you doing a Crazy Eddie thing? He was a big success story.
So they've slashed those prices all the way down to $59 for a single day or $99 for the weekend pass. And you can apparently get those on layaway because the website says, I shit you not, the website says the tickets, quote, start at $2.50 down, end quote.
Like down payment?
I think. Yep. What else could that possibly mean?
That's clearly what that means.
I would like to hit our audience with a hard truth. If you are on a payment plan for Kid Rock's America's Birthday Concert, you're never going to pay that off. I'm just letting you know right now. That will remain
debt-free.
It's
like a Columbia House debt. Yeah, you die with that one.
Hey, Rock the Country Tour, maybe you can bundle some tranches of those Kid Rock fucking mortgages and you could sell those too. That'd be great.
No, of course.
I shouldn't give them ideas. They'll probably
honestly. Yeah, no, they'll have their own meme coin. No, of course, the organizers didn't go so far as admitting why they were cutting prices. Instead, knowing that only the dumbest possible people would pay to see Kid Rock and Friends, they tried to play it off like they were doing America a solid. Here's the actual wording of the announcement. Quote, "Hey, you America-loving people, we have a few super important updates for you. Fuel costs are up, and we want to help."
Why are fuel costs up, Kid Rock?
Hey, why don't you shut the fuck up? Continuing the quote. "In response to rising transportation
costs..." Answer the question!
"You can
why are they up?
Up to 50% off general admission passes to any of 7 small-town stops for a limited time only. Take advantage of this offer, fill up your tank, and we'll see you this summer." End quote.
Hopefully, your gas station offers a mortgage with a down payment of $250 for each tank.
Yeah, right. By the way, in case my voice didn't convey it, there are no fewer than 4 exclamation marks in that quote.
To be fair, Noah, if you wanted to convey the emotions behind that statement, you would have had to begin by sitting on your nuts.
Really?
Like
Well, I mean, I have tears in my eyes, if that helps. So I want to draw your attention to one specific aspect of that announcement. They say that they're slashing prices to, quote, any of 7 small town stops, end quote. Which is all their venues, right? They were apparently hoping that people would read that and assume that there were some other bigger venues where they were still charging full price, but they're not. Because that would make them at least somewhat less pathetic than the maximum amount of pathetic per square inch that they've achieved with this nonsense.
There's just a guy at the bar announcing, "Forgive me, bros, looks like tonight I'm taking home a solid 6. And they're like, "Dude, that's your wife." And no, you're not. She left with another guy.
It's true, he's not. We don't have sex.
No.
We don't.
That's what she said.
So, needless to say, that this pissed off a lot of people who already bought tickets, especially since the advertising for like early ticket prices assured that the purchasers that they were getting the lowest possible price. And, of course, there were a lot more music artists on the bill when they bought those goddamn tickets. And that's actually deeply important to me because it means that despite what I thought, there are people in this world who bought tickets to a musical festival that I can feel even less sorry for than the jackasses at Fyre Festival.
It's an achievement.
Who'da thunk, right?
And on that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to No Illusions, thanks to Eli Bosnick, and thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed us on all the various internets. Eli's dancing right now. If you were checking out some of our videos, you'd be able to see it yourself. We've been putting out some videos. That's exciting. That's exciting, huh? Okay, please keep doing all that. Check out our videos as well. Please keep listening and viewing, and please keep telling your friends. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away free show business model to be oddly charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com.
Don't dance into your microphone, man.
/skepticrat.
Nailed it.
Just like all the generous new donors, you will be complimented next time around.
You nailed your microphone.
You did. It was loud. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, If you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and Eli's dancing and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Awful Movies, D&D-, and Citation Needed, available in all the podcast places.
Eli is always dancing on Citation Needed, by the way. You don't usually know it because we don't do
he's
that
just,
one on video.
It's a dance. It's a musical performance for him. A lot of choreography or just, you know, winging it. Dancing Off the Dome. That's Eli's dance album. Dancing Off the Dome with Eli. Last thing, let's compliment that penis. Eli made too big of a smile. We're not
Hashtag
doing it. We're not doing it.
Off the dome.
Special thanks to Ryan Zlotnick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He's the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check them out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase time.
Dancing Off the Dome. That's our catchphrase.
Okay, so now we're definitely gonna arrest her for being a pedophile.
Part of a child rape.
It's so weird that you would admit it like that.
I'm gonna do a press conference about the not human skin that I'm involved with.
I watched me saying the word Gwyn's hit Eve in the face like a steel bowling ball.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.